It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Guys, Keith Johnson's here. KJ Sawdust is here. But before we
And
get
I will
to
be
it-
here in 15 minutes when you're done with your ad read, so just click my mic back on then.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. My man Keith Johnson's here. Shop Sounds Podcast. KJ Sawdust in the house. Before we get to it, let's do my. We're gonna put the timer on now, guys. Welcome to the Full Blast Podcast. I'm Jeff Fader. And before we get into it, let's go. You got a little bit of a crackling going on, but that's okay. That's all right. I hear you. You're all right, guys. Broadback Ironworks. Don't start the clock now. Now start the clock. Broadback Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder. Don't stop. I mean, I'm telling you, it's the best. And I love those guys. And if you go to broadbackironworks.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you can get 10% off all their products, all their machines, all their attachments, all their packages. I'm getting a lot of messages of people using KNIFETALK10 for that, and I think you should too. So definitely support my guys over at Broadback. I'm a huge fan. Next are my friends at Evenheat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com. Get yourself some of that tap control. Get some of that solid state drive. Hey, if you got to get it hard, I mean, you got to use an Evenheat, period. That's the next t-shirt for those guys. We'll make it happen. Guys, stop playing. Get an Evenheat. Next, my friends at Maritime Knife Supply. That's MaritimeKnifeSupply.com for all your knife making needs, belts, abrasives, steels, kilns, forges, press, heat treating ovens, all that stuff. They're in Canada, and they have Lawrence Lake is amazing. He is. If you're a Canadian knife maker or a metal worker or a woodworker and you're looking for great products, definitely use Maritime Knife Supply. United States, there are some things are on the website that he can send to United States and some things that he can't. So he's got it all squared away. Go definitely browse the website, check it out, and definitely support Lawrence because he's supporting great facilities like the Center for Metal Arts and the New England School of Metalwork. So it's good enough for him. It's good enough for you. And we should support our guy. So MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. Many thanks to our friends at Trojan Horse Forge, makers of the Stabrail Knife Finishing Vise, makers of T4 Sentinel Oil, knives, and they also teach classes. So definitely go over to TrojanHorseForge.com, see what the fuss is about, and when you're getting a product, you can put in the promo code FULLBLAST10, and you're going to get 10% off. My friends at Baker Forge want you to know that they got your back when it comes to using exotic steels. If you go to BakerForge.com, you can see what the fuss is about. You got new stuff all the time. They got a new product that I don't know if I can put out yet. It's a really great product, and you're going to really like it. So definitely follow Baker Forge and Tool on Instagram. And if you want to get yourself involved with some of this exotic steels, copper mys, bronze mys, sand mys, all that stuff, go get yourself some of that Baker Forge, and you put in the promo code FULLBLAST, you get 10% off. And then they hold your hand. They tell you how to, you know, if you're a sock removal guy, this is the perfect knife for you. This perfect steel for you because it's all ready to go. It's all annealed. You can use your lousy span saw, and it'll be fine. And when it comes to heat treating, super duper easy, hold your hand. And then when it comes to etching, they got a lot of stuff for you. They got the OG Gator Piss. I know what you're saying. Gator Piss? What the hell is that? GatorPiss. Gator short for alligator. Piss is short for urine. This stuff will etch your steel. Doesn't have to be Baker Forge steel either. And then they have Gator Piss Max for stainless steels and Gator Piss Heavy for that deep dark etch. And you can also get Gator Piss at Texas Ferry Supply. Texas Ferry Supply has all your stuff. If you're a knife maker, blacksmith, bladesmith, however you identify, you can go and check. I get all my Rhino Wet from those guys, from Evan and those guys. And when I go to the checkout, when I'm buying all my Rhino Wet, I'll put in the promo code KNIFETALK10 and I'll get 10% off. when I use the promo code KnifeTalk10. So definitely use that. Next are my friends at, I'm sure my buddy over here knows all about them, Total Boat. Total Boat, baby.
Total Boat, baby.
Total Boat, man. Hey, listen, Total Boat makes a great adhesive paints, primers, polishing compounds. And they used to be for boaters and DIYers, and then now they realize everybody can use them. And I'm really pioneering the knife game to say, if you're a knife maker, I've been using their two-part epoxy exclusively for like 2 years now. And I just used their Fathom Thick Set. They don't call it Fathom Thick Set anymore. They call it Fathom. And I've been making the hybrid handle materials, what you woodworkers would refer to as those dreaded river tables. And one of the interesting things is you don't need a pressure pot because it cures so slowly and get no bubbles. I've done it now 3 times, and I'm an idiot. Like, I'm not great at reading instructions. Like, I know all about it, and I put it together. Next thing you know, bingo, bango, bongo, no bubbles. So definitely use the go through this website or link, totalboat.com/fullblast. If it's good enough for Keith Deason, Derek from Malden, Keith Johnson, even Keith Mitchell, and that scoundrel Jimmy Duresta, it's good enough for you. So if you're at Maker Camp, I'm going to be doing a 2-day demo with them. We're going to do some handle scales on how I make handle scales for my knife, and it will be fun and easy and probably different than you're used to. Next are my friends at Giel Hansen & Sons. It's g.l._Hansen & Sons. They're the makers of G-Carta, which is a unique composite of natural fibers and fabrics mixed under epoxy and pressure. Go to gcarta.bigcartel.com and get yourself some of that fine handle scales. Or if you're a pen guy, if you're a pen turner, I don't know how many pen turners listen to this show, but if you're a pen turner, go up, be my guest. Get yourself some of that hoopla, bofa, pheasant, colorama, hoopla, all that stuff. Go to gcarter.bigcartel.com. Stuff is awesome. I'm a huge fan. And now my customers are asking for it by name. So definitely get yourself some of that G. Carter from GL Hansen & Sons. Follow them on Instagram, too. And I want to thank my friends at Tormach, celebrating 50-plus years of being in business with the Black TA sharpening system and more and more and more. I have about 5 Tormachs. No. I have 3, 4, 5, 6. I have 6 Tormachs. So I could take Tormachs, put them under a piece of plywood, and I could have a car. I could make myself my own very slow-moving car. And you could, too. You go to Tormach.com or Tormach_sharpening Instagram. Fall jokes aside, it's a great water-cooled sharpening system to get yourself squared away. It's made me a better knife maker. All you chisel guys, this is for you. If you're trying to get it sharp, don't fool around. I'm telling you, guys with the belts, you think you know everything, you're going to get everything all fucked up. And they don't tell me that, but I'm telling you that. What you're going to do is you're going to undercut your heel. I'm telling you this out of experience. So definitely don't do that. Go to Tormach.com. And if you're in Australia and you're thinking, God, I want all these tools, but I just don't know if this is for me, I want you to go to nordicedge.com.au if you're in Australia. And they are Nordic Edge is a great company that not only sponsors and supports knife making, leather working, spoon carving, blacksmithing, but they teach classes so you can decide without spending all this money and all this stuff, you can decide if you really want to do it. And they teach great classes, and Sausage Man Forge is awesome, and Bjorn and Mert Tansu's involved with those guys. So that's good enough for you. It's good enough for me. They have the guidance and help to accelerate your creativity and the tools, products, and supplies to help you manifest your ideas. NordicEdge.com.au. And without further ado, I want to thank my friends at Phoenix Abrasives. Almost thought I was done, didn't you? 7 minutes and 59 seconds. I want an apology. PhoenixAbrasives.com for all your suppliers of superior abrasive products and for every application. Knife making, metalworking, glass fab, floor sanding, and crankshaft. I don't know what that is, but if you're fucking with a crankshaft, you get yourself Phoenix Abrasives. Sorry. I got a little bit frisky on that one. Get yourself involved with all your belts and grindings, cutting discs, flap discs, surface conditioning. And then at checkout, put in FB10. You're going to get 10% off everything. I get belts from those guys. And I'm surprised at their variety. So definitely get yourself some of that. And Phoenix Abrasives, I'm with you, phoenixabrasives.com. And without any further ado, my main man is here, Keith Johnson, KJ Sawdust. He's all over the place. He also has a great not only is he on YouTube and Instagram, doesn't do Instagram as much anymore, but we'll talk about that. But he also has a great podcast called Shop Sounds. I'm a fan. These are my guys. Keith Johnson, how the hell are you?
I'm well. I'm actually just, I'm a little amazed because you have twice as many sponsors as we do on your podcast, and you did the ad reads in the same amount of time as we do.
Yeah.
So I need to tighten my
Well, here's, I've seen, you guys do a really, really nice job. And so on Knife Talk, we've made it almost like a radio show where we have breaks in between their bits and then the ad reads go in between the bits. But like when you're having a long form conversation, kind of, I mean, there's so many different things in Knife Talk where we have moments to stop and start. So it makes sense. But within a situation like this, like if I'm getting someone to cry, I can't say wipe your tears with Phoenix Abrasives. Probably, you know, so it's like doesn't really make sense. So I try to rip through them, and I have a good. I like to play. You know, I mean, that's what Howard Stern used to do. He used to make jokes, and then people like laugh. I mean, the Baker Forge guys, they're thrilled. They're thrilled when I fool around. Like there was a I've been saying for the Gator Piss G. You know, because how do you do a fucking ad read for Gator Piss? It's ridiculous. I love it, but it's like the most. It's hilarious. So if it's gonna be hilarious, I'll be hilarious. And I used to say all sorts of stuff, and then I get a message from Coy. He says, "Yeah, do whatever you want." So I started saying, "What is Gator Piss?" It's GatorPiss. Gator short for alligator. Piss is short for urine. So a guy sends me a message, and he said he's in this garage. You know, he's in a gas station somewhere in rural somewhere. And a guy's wearing a Gator Piss shirt. I don't know why you would wear. I mean, God bless
wow,
you.
Wow, that's bold. You.
And a guy comes up to me and he goes, old geezer goes, what is Gator Piss? And the only thing that came to mind was he goes, GatorPiss, Gator short for alligator, piss is short for urine, and walked away. Left the guy like scratching his head. So I think, you know, I try to make it fun and, you know, everything works out. Everyone's happy.
Well, that's always the balance that you have to play, especially even on YouTube when you're doing integrated ads and on podcasts, is you don't want people to skip through what you're saying, but you also need to be informative about what the product is so that the sponsor is happy. So when you work with sponsors like you and I do, who are very open to however we want to present their product, as long as we do it in a fun and informative way, I mean, those are the type of people you want to work with. I don't want to work with these corporate stiffs who are like, no, you have to say this, you can't say that. It's like, screw you. Like, we're trying to make this personal and a fun experience for everybody. So,
but you know what? All this stuff, this content in general, it's about the slow burn. Mm. It's never about the immediacy. At one time years ago, Vince from Broadbeck called me up and he said, hey, listen to a podcast. And somebody was asking about woodworking. And, you know, fine cabinetry, like what you do, fine cabinetry. And I said I wouldn't use a Broadbeck for fine cabinetry. Like, there's not a lot of, like, I have worked for a fine cabinetry guy. And the materials, you know, the process that you're using is not really meant for, 2x72 grinder. And I made some comment about that on the podcast. He sent me a message. He says, I just, you know, want you to know that it is. And I said, well, not really. I mean, you know, I've worked in a cabinet shop and there was no real moments where we were, you know, standing up to his 2x72 grinder. And it was a great conversation, but it was just like, that was the only time anyone ever said it. And I, you know, it was fine, but you're talking like 5 years ago. But I was just like, I can't really say it's something that it's not, you know. So it was a good conversation, but at the same time, yeah, you got to like, I never had a problem with, never had a problem with sponsors. The only problem I've had with sponsors is there was a wax company that I used to work with, and they just kind of ghosted me along with every other person who used it, tried to buy their products, which became a problem because all of a sudden I'd been talking about it for so long that people seem to think that I'm working for them, which I'm clearly not. So like even two or three years after I stopped working with them, people are like, what's going on with this company? I send them emails and they don't send anything back, or I sent them money and they didn't send me product. So that's more, you know, bothersome than anything else.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of, I mean, that just is becoming more and more prevalent, are these scam companies that have fake websites that are selling you things and they have fake reviews. So you buy something, they never ship it. They keep your money. There's no customer service and you're screwed. You have no recourse. And they're not only that, they're becoming more and more advanced. Like, we had a friend of mine had Sony reach out to them about doing an ad integration on the YouTube channel. And the thing was legit. The email was legit. Like, it from Sony, picture of the person, everything looked good. It went through our agency. It got past their kind of security services onto the next step. And they send you a link to a YouTube channel to watch the video. And they had somehow created this fake YouTube thing where it was... It looked like it was YouTube, and on the sides, it was showing your normal suggested videos, but it wasn't from the YouTube platform. And so they just wanted you to click on this, and then eventually, I don't know how they were going to get your money. I think because the way these people usually pay is you have to give them your bank information so they can wire you the money. They don't really send checks. But it was so intricate. It must have taken months for them to come up with this scam to make everything look real on screen. And the whole thing was a hoax. So you got to be careful.
That reminds me, Matt Stagmer, who's a dynamite guy, he was on the podcast like a year or so ago. And it was on the heels of he was working on his YouTube channel. And then, like you were saying, the scam. And now, we're going to talk about scam and not scam. We're talking about scam and just people who are not prepared for business. But they were going to do business with him. I mean, I don't know how it works with YouTube, I would imagine, especially if that's your only source of income. You're a little bit more open to work with, you know, different companies and stuff like that. He clicked something. Next thing you know, they took control of his whole YouTube channel. And it was like everything was like his, like, it, that whole episode, the last time Matt was on, it was like, it like tore him up because like he had so much information on that YouTube channel, and it was like his sole means of, you know, business and stuff like that.
Right.
And it was like, you hear about these things and you're just like, I don't want to click on anything ever again.
I know. Anytime they send you a link, and that's the thing with the Sony thing, they're like, here's a link for a video we need you to watch. So it'll explain everything. And every time you followed up with another question, they're like, oh, it's all in the video link that we sent you, which is a red flag right there. Well, they're not directly answering a question.
Okay.
They're like, hey, I'll go check out this link again. And I don't know. It's just very easy. I mean, even everything, all these, the Craigslist and Facebook Marketplace scams where people respond to your ad and they're like, please hold this and I'll pay you an extra 30%. And it's never ending. And listen, I've fallen for them in the past. I didn't lose anything or get, nothing was compromised, but it's very, they make it look so real because they've, after years and years of realizing that people aren't responding to this, they just keep refining the process and making it look more and more legit. And you know, we're just getting dumber and dumber, or I don't know what, it's a bad combination.
You're right, because it's like, you know, I think that the interesting thing about content creators in general is there's such a, based off of the people that I know, a lot of them are very naive when it comes to the, you know, business. And that could be experience. That also could be just age. Like, back to the wax company. I don't think that there's a lot. I don't think that these people are like intentionally trying to stay. I think that most people, when they start their small business, like all the businesses that I work with are small businesses. I mean, Total Boat's a little bit bigger, and I don't work with Milwaukee or DeWalt or something like that. So I'm working with like small businesses. I forget. Some of them have a harder time with the concept of what's the expectation of business or not. And in the knife business, the crazy part is like there's so many people kind of like coming up, and then they spend money on these amazing videos, and they spend money on their website, and then they just fold up, you know. So there's this mix between, I don't think everybody's a scam. I think that some people are just, they don't have a deep sense of the idea that everything's hard and it takes a long time, and then there's not a meteoric rise that's sustainable is a rarity.
Right.
You know, like Montana Knife Company, my friend Josh Smith is like, I mean, what he's done with Montana Knife Company is just extraordinary. And it's like, he's got like 150 employees and they're building a manufacturing facility in Montana and stuff like that. And he has like, he's got knives with all the UFC guys. He gets ad reads on Joe Rogan. He's like, he's created an incredible market from the beginning of the pandemic to now. That the hardest part is all these young guys just like, yeah, I know. I've been following. I know Josh for a long time. if why isn't this happening to me? Mm. And then what happens is there's like there's less understanding in regards to, you know, the realities of being how hard it is to be in small business.
Yeah, no, I think we run into that in kind of in my circle too, where you see some influencers, some YouTubers getting a sponsorship from this company, and you have a way bigger or more successful channel, and they are not answering your emails. It's like, why? I don't understand. But sometimes some companies are drawn to some people and not to others, and a lot of times it's, you know, I go to a lot of events. Woodworking events, whatever's available out there, because that's your chance to have FaceTime with these with these companies.
Huge.
And FaceTime is so huge. Just shaking someone's hand, looking them in the eye, and you could have a small channel, you could be, but if there's a connection there and you guys just get along great.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
It just seems like a good relationship. You know, they're more apt to send you product and pay you versus someone, a faceless name that they don't know, even though they might have a much bigger audience. So that personal connection is huge.
Yeah, I think that also comes from experience. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about when you were coming. I'm so glad you're here, by the way. You're just one of my favorite people. Oh, you're one of my favorite people. And it's always great kind of catching up. You know, I've gotten to the point now where I'm having a harder and harder time relating to people younger than me. And like my inner circle, I mean, the people I talk to, like, you know, that I confide in are all, you know, one guy I went to college with, who's a lawyer now, and another guy is a Wall Street guy that I went to high school with. And those are the two guys, like, now the only two guys I've been having a real hard time. These are the only guys that I can identify with. Because when we talk about things going on in our lives, even though what we do is so different, there's this, you know, it's almost like the same bloodline in regards to we knew each other since we were kids, younger at least, and now we're kind of going through the same things within the lens of our experience at our age. Like, I can't, like, we get messages on Knife Talk, I can't relate to any of these fucking people. Can't. These young kids can't do it.
You know, I'm in a similar situation because in kind of the woodworking world or content creator world, they're all younger. They're all in their 30s. I'm kind of like the old guard. And it does become a little bit unrelatable. Like, hey, man, you taking a leak 3 times a night like me? And they're like, what? No.
Dude. I have go ahead. I got a funny story to tell you. This is so embarrassing. Go ahead.
Real quick. But for me, it's actually good hanging out with these younger people because you can, the energy they have, they're more motivated, and it inspires me to, like, all right, like, get your ass in gear here and get some stuff done, rather than being with a bunch of older people my age who, you know, we're kind of, I mean, listen, I know you're not, I'm not necessarily in cruise control, but I'm not looking to work any harder for the rest of my life. All right. It's like I did 20 years in corporate America. I'm tired. I'm going to do the minimum amount possible to get the biggest yield possible. And, like, you know, I work 7 days a week. You know, I'm in the shop all the time, in and out. But, you know, hey, I take a nap every day and I'll do. So I have appointments here and there. I got to, you know, as you're getting older, more doctor's appointments. That's just another fact of life.
I have a funny story to tell you. So I'm talking to my friend Eric. Known this guy since I was 13, right? he's a, like I said, he's been a wall. And actually, it's gotten to the point now where these guys with real experience, I appreciate their opinion. Like when we talk about the economy or we talk about what's going on with tariffs, like I like having a guy that I've known since I was a kid who can kind of explain things in a way that kind of makes sense. So I'm talking to Eric, and he ran the New York City Marathon a couple times. His dad ran the. I know his dad, you know, and he knows that he's sending me messages all the time. He wanted to come up and run with me for on a long weekend, and I said, "You're going to hate it. Don't do it. You're gonna be miserable running next to me. Trust me. I won't put you through it." So we're having this conversation. He's like, "So how you feeling?" I'm like, "Well, you know, I went to the vitamin shop and I was getting these electrolytes. You know, you got to get all this when you're running long distance. It's not just like." You don't just put your sneakers on and go.
Right.
You got to bring water, and you got to bring electrolytes, and you got to bring these little goo packs. Fucking disgusting. The worst and the worst of the worst. But I mean, they're like, if you're in the midst and you need a little bit of a boost, it's the easy way to consume it without, like, you know, and some of them hurt your stomach, and some. All right. So I go to the vitamin shop, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm looking for like a electrolyte that's better than. Like Gatorade, I don't want the sugar, and you know, maybe there's something out there that's better. So he found this thing, it's called Hydrate. And he sends it, he brings it to me, and he's like, yeah, everyone loves this. This is their best selling one. I'm like, okay, great. So I fill up for in the little water, you know, jars, like ticket in the jar, a little squeeze thing that I bring with me on the run. And after about 2 months, I was like, yeah, it's fine. I mean, I don't have a baseline of whether or not it's good or not, frankly. And you know, I never am that guy either. I can't, you know, microscope what the fuck I'm doing at anything. Like, I really, I don't know. I guess I'm okay. So I'm using it and using it and using it. And all of a sudden, I'm starting to realize I'm getting heart palpitations. So I don't know why. So I'm talking to my wife, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm getting these heart palpitations. Hey, you're cracking up a little bit.
Oh, I'm not doing anything.
Okay. You're right. We'll be all right. So I'm saying to my wife, I'm like, yeah, I've been having heart palpitations forever. It sounds like, you know, funny enough is the crackling. All of a sudden, I'm thinking maybe I'm having heart palpitations again.
Yeah, that's your end, dude.
So Hillary's just like, well, what are you doing that's different? I'm like, well, I'm not drinking as much coffee as I used to. And I'm, you know, blah, blah, blah. So she said, what about that electrolyte you have? And I bring her the jar. And the writing is so small.
Mm.
I'm telling this to Eric. I can't read it, even with my reading glasses. And... she's looking through it, and she's got her reading glasses. She's holding it far back, and all of a sudden it says, "If you're having heart palpitations from this, don't take it anymore."
Oh.
She goes, "It's the goddamn." She's like, "It's the goddamn electrolytes giving you heart palpitations." I mean, I was having heart palpitations like all day long from this goddamn electrolyte part. I'm telling Eric this, and I'm like, I don't know what's worse, the fact that I was getting the heart palpitations from the electrolyte, or the fact that the writing was so small, I refused to go up in my reading glasses size. Because I couldn't read, even with my magnified reader glasses, I can't read the fucking letters. And we were having this laugh about, like, that's what it takes. You know, you were saying how many times you go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. And it's like that, too. It's like if you've gone to the bathroom only once a night, that's like a victory.
Oh, huge victory.
Oh, my God. Look at us. Alter cockers.
I know. It's sad. But, you know, my dad used to say, one day you're going to wake up and everything's going to hurt. And the next day, something else is going to hurt, even though everything else hurts. And God damn if he wasn't right. Wake up, my back hurts, my neck hurts, this is stiff. Like, I can't. It's so debilitating and so, it saddens me deeply.
Does it affected your work?
No, it just affects how quickly I can kind of get moving in the morning. I used to get up at 4:45 every day, go to the gym, work all day, in bed at 10 o'clock, like the routine was there every day. It was the same. And now I find it harder to go to bed early, yet I stay in bed longer. And yeah, the energy throughout the day is definitely less. I certainly can't go to the gym first thing in the morning anymore. My body's too stiff. Like I got to be up, moving, get the blood flowing. I usually go midday. And that, which stinks because I really want to go first thing in the morning to kind of get it over with. And it just jump starts the day rather than interrupting the middle of my day to go and then come back. But I just can't do it. My body's like, sorry, dude, it's not going to happen. Or you're going to get hurt.
This is the hardest part about, like, you know, the weirdest thing I was talking to, I don't remember who I was talking to about it, but you know, Ozempic has turned into like this miracle drug that is, is so perfect for this generation of people who want this instant satisfaction without having to do a whole lot of work. Like, it's almost like, it's almost like some sort of Greek, it's like a Greek play where Ozempic is the perfect medication for this generation. You know, there's no real consequences. It's turning into this miracle drug. It's good for your heart. It's good for your cholesterol. Good for your diabetes. And you lose weight. Plus, they just found out it makes your dick bigger. I mean, it's like, I mean, you can't make it up. I mean, it's fucking, I mean, this is like hilarious. Meanwhile, me, you know, my wife and I, she doesn't run as much because she's got some situation going on. And she walks with a weighted vest. Mm-hmm. And we eat a certain way, and now I'm running for the New York City Marathon, and I'm doing all this stuff, and I'm recovering better, but I'm, like, really on the edge of every week. My weeks get longer and longer, and I'm on the edge of, can I make the next training session without my knees just, like, totally giving up?
Right.
And I just I'm all about the marathon. I mean, in terms of, like, life. Like, I can't take the pill, dude.
Oh, hell, you know, and that's the problem with miracle drugs like this, is there's really no long-term studies on this. It's too new.
Well, no, it's not, because these have been used for diabetes for a long time, these GPL blockers.
But the problem is they're giving it to these young kids who aren't even that overweight, and they're taking it to lose 10 pounds. Like, that's not what these drugs are for. They're for people who are with a lot of medical conditions who can't lose weight, and because they can't lose weight, they have adverse health condition, heart conditions, whatever the case may be, high blood pressure. So this helps regulate that, bring their weight down. And the problem is healthy people are taking this crap.
Right.
Where because they don't want to put in a little extra work, you know, eat a little bit better, move more.
And microdosing before a wedding.
Yeah. Right.
No, chill, not kidding.
Yeah.
People are microdosing before an event because they want to drop a few pounds.
It's like cutting weight before a UFC fight.
Yeah. The craziest part is I, you know, I'm just, maybe I'm too old and stubborn. And I'm also, I was talking to Honor Kagler last week, and I was talking to him this past weekend. He ran a 50-mile race. 50 miles.
Jesus.
And he does his stories today, and he's fucked up on the couch. I mean, he's got chafe on the sides of his legs. His knees are destroyed. His ankles are destroyed. He is a wreck. And he and I were talking about how spite motivates us. Like, spite motivates me. Like, I'm very, everything I do is because when you say I can't do something, it's just like, I mean, it's the open sesame for, oh, Jesus Christ, one more thing I got to do. And, like, my doctor originally told me years ago, you can't do the marathon, you're too big. I'm like, fuck you. And I did it. And now
it's accepted.
Yeah, I was just like, you son of a bitch, you. And it was just, I got to show him, you know, and, or somebody in my family, there's, you know, it's some people in my family, they're all talk, no action. I can't do that. But, you know, when I was talking to a friend of mine about Ozempic, and we were talking about the restaurant business, and I have two things. The students from a class is a retired Wall Street guy, and he writes a newsletter about the economy. And he was just talking about, he was in this newsletter, he's basically saying, doesn't look like there's a recession forecoming. He's based off of my, you know, my information, stuff like that. And I was talking to my restaurant friend, and he says, yeah, there's a recession coming because people aren't going to restaurants, and restaurants are the first line of defense. But one of the things he said was fascinating is, and there are articles coming out about it, is because so many people are on Ozempic, they believe that people on Ozempic are not going out to eat, and that's attributing to the fact that people aren't eating out as much. Can you believe that?
I mean, it makes sense because most of the time it's overweight people who need the convenience, who don't want to cook and do anything healthy, and they just want to go out and order food and have it.
They don't want any, but they don't eat anything. My next door neighbors were on Ozempic, and they were like, we were talking about it, and they're like, yeah, when we go out to dinner, we share an appetizer. That's it. I mean, that's like two people going to a restaurant and sharing one appetizer. That's dinner.
Well, this is what I don't get about that. If you're not eating, that means you're not getting vitamins and minerals and all these amino acids and essential things your body needs from food, whether it be something that grew in the ground, grew on a tree, or had parents, like, that needs to go into your body, and you can't just get that from a pill. So I'm just very curious to see what happens, you know, just maybe a complete flip of the coin in 15, 20 years of all these people, are young people are taking Ozempic, and now they have serious health problems.
Right.
Because
right.
their bodies are in complete disarray.
It's amazing, and at the same time, it's so apropos of our society right now in regards to, like, not taking responsibility for your actions and being able to just mm-hmm. kind of have something that immediately gives you this thing. I'm for it. Listen, you know what? The funny thing is, I was talking to my wife, and she said to me, I was saying this, I think that person's on this episode. She goes, what the fuck do you care? Like, if this is helping somebody, I know, she's like, I know tons of people who have diabetes who really need this help. And why do you care? And then she goes, you're just fat phobic. And I was just like, yeah, you're probably right. And I said, yeah, you're right. I'm not defending it. And she says, so what the fuck do you care? It has nothing to do with you. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. So I'll shut my mouth. It's a fucking nothing to do with me.
Right.
You know, I'm one of these guys who I don't need to, my soapbox has like very short steps. You know, I hop off that fucking thing quick. I don't give a fuck. God bless you.
You're not the gatekeeper for weight loss?
Apparently, I'm a gatekeeper for a few things. But how's your health going? How's everything going with you?
I mean, without going into too many details, it's better. I mean, we're still, my recent blood work, I thought I had Lyme again, but I don't. But we found mold and heavy metal toxicity with lead, which I don't know where the hell that's coming from. So we're on supplements and detox protocols for that, which is helping. I mean, listen, for years I wasn't able to go to the gym more than 3 times a week because it just killed me. And now Tyler's got me 4 days a week and it's not a problem.
A Melee Minton.
Yes.
Is that working out?
Yeah. Listen, Tyler's great.
Shout out to Tyler Minton. He's a friend of ours, and he's a former UFC fighter, and now he's like a big nutritionist.
Well, I mean, the guy has his master's in nutrition. He's a registered dietitian with all this experience he has, like fighting and training UFC athletes, training NFL athletes, training Navy SEALs. Wow. And the guy's like 37. I mean, he's got his shit together. And, you know, he just... other trainers I've worked with don't understand that I'm 50 and my body doesn't respond like a 20-year-old. So, you know, we're constantly tweaking things and obviously weekly check-ins on what's working and what's not. And I need to be more realistic about how fast things happen. You know, it's a marathon, not a sprint at this age, but
yeah.
I just want to be in shape. I don't want my health to be what causes problems down the line. Like, you know, if you're just gone lifted weights a couple times a week, this, you know, you'd never have this problem. So I just want to make sure that I'm taking, you know, you only have one body.
Yeah.
You can't just turn it in and lease a new one. So I'm just trying to take care of it as best as possible. Listen, we all have weaknesses. There's some things I just, you know, there's other things in the day that I need to be doing where, you know, but I still try to walk 2 to 3 times a day, eat right. I don't try not to go off the rails. Especially when traveling, that's always the toughest part.
Oh, it's the worst.
And, you know, I'm a creature of habit, so once I find, like, something I like to eat, like, that's all I'll eat because unlike you, I do not like cooking. I don't like figuring out what I'm going to eat. I just want, just put it in front of me or it's the same thing, fine.
I'm going to break something to you. I don't like it. I don't like cooking, but that's in my family, that's a good spot to be in. That's a good spot to be in. Otherwise, my contributions to the household are very, very light. My contributions are very minimum. But, you know, it's like my family likes to what I cook. And then I've fit into my cubbyhole position.
I mean, you're an amazing cook. I mean, the stuff you show on Instagram and everywhere else, and I've tasted your food before. So... you're an amazing cook. You know, your flavors, you know, you liked working with different, like, I just, I don't like things with garlic. I don't like spicy things. I'm a meat and potatoes kind of simple guy. I'll go to a restaurant where it's $150 a plate. I'm like, yeah, it's okay. I mean, that wasn't worth $150.
I know that feeling.
You know, I'm like, are you kidding me? I could have fed myself for an entire week, three meals a day for that I just spent for one meal. And so that's why I don't like, I will spend money on stupid shit all the time, but I have a hard time spending money going out to eat because that money is spent and then it's in the toilet the next day. Like, it's just, I literally. And when I spend money and there's nothing tangible at the end to either hold on to or use on a daily basis, I just have a hard time spending it. I'll do it because, you know, sometimes I don't want to cook, but I mean, we go out to eat maybe once a month.
Oh, wow.
That's it.
You're part of the problem.
No, I know. I'm bringing the restaurant business to its knees.
You're part of the problem, Keith.
But you know what? We'll get takeout from a local pub. They have great salads and stuff. But half the time, the order comes out wrong. Like,
yeah.
I wanted this and it was that, and they didn't put this on the side or they forgot this. And when you go in to pick up, it's like these 18-year-old girls at the register, and they check you out. And now I don't know where you stand on this tipping culture, but I fucking had it. Fucking had it with you pick up something at the dry cleaner and they turn it around and it asks for a tip. So I go pick up my two salads for $45, and she flips the screen around and it wants a tip. And you know what? I will tip food service people because it's a job I would never, ever want. So I give her $2 and she didn't do anything. She ran the credit card through. They don't even say thank you, like nothing.
Yeah.
And that annoys me even more. But then I'm like, if I don't tip next time, like, what kind of service am I going to get? Are they purposely going to fuck up my order? And it's like, it's almost like insurance that you have to pay so your shit comes out right. And then I order stuff online and it says a tip for our factory workers. Like, holy shit, I'm paying $11 in shipping when I know it only costs $4. So what the fuck? Either pay your people and take that shit off, like in Europe, where they get insulted when you tip them.
Yeah.
And it's just everywhere you go, the tipping culture is out of control.
You know what? This is so hilarious. Actually, we have the sushi in our area. The good ones are super expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But Hillary and I like cheap, takeout, passable. Fine.
Grocery store sushi.
We do grocery store California rolls. Yep. But like, there's a place that the prices stay the same relatively. It's very, you know, to go sushi is different than like, if you go to the sushi in a really nice place in the city, you're getting a different experience than like, you know, give me three rolls, you know, tuna roll, a couple California rolls. And so the bullshit stuff, you know, you want just a dependable sushi place. So we've always said, and it's mediocre. No one's like, you know, it's not Jiro Dreams of Sushi when you open the bag and you get home. You know, it's like, this is like, you know, just passable, relatively inexpensive sushi. And we've been going to this couple of places, and one of this place, we order, since the pandemic, you can order online. You don't have to talk to anybody. You have to call it in. You don't have to have them repeat the order. You type it up. You got your information, and it always asks for a tip. Doesn't let you go to checkout unless you have to go past the tip.
Right.
And in the beginning, during the pandemic, we would tip. And then I'd say, oh, they want me to tip for the, you know, doing all the work. I mean, I'm putting in the order and everything like that.
Right, yeah.
And I'm picking it up. I'm doing it on, and Hillary's like, you got to tip. And then there have been a couple times where she's not in the room. I forgot the tip. You know, like, no, literally, like, I'm not fucking tipping. But like you said, they don't say anything. They don't do anything. Not that they need to, like, do a dance or anything like that. But, I mean, they didn't really do a whole lot more than just, they didn't even can me the bag. They give, like, a ledge.
Right, yeah, that you grab
it. See their
name,
you pick it up. And so it's like, there's not really, you know, they're taking the bag from the sushi bar and they're putting it on the ledge where you come pick it up. They're not even handing it to you. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, you know what? I've been coming to this goddamn place for two. I don't need to tip these people anymore. My wife's like, yo, you got to tip them. But then they have our profile so they know when we're tipping and when we're not tipping.
Yeah.
And now when Hillary has me write it up now, I'm just like, I'm not tipping. And I'm not telling her about it either. I mean, if she does, she don't do the order, she knows I'll do it. Usually what we'll do is we'll take the laptop, we'll hand it to her, she'll put in her order, hand it to Lila when she's around, she'll put in her order, hand it to me, I take care of the end of the thing. And, yeah, I just didn't see the tip this week. But the move is just don't say anything. Right. And I haven't noticed it being good or bad. I haven't noticed it being different. I haven't noticed it being like, you know, I haven't noticed whether or not I'm getting it right, they're getting it right or wrong. And I'm definitely just like, if I go to a coffee place, and then they turn the fucking screen around, I'm giving a tip. There's a deli around here. It's the eyeball pressure, you know?
Mm.
But if it's like, if I'm doing the fucking on the computer all by myself, and it's like the self checkout at the supermarket. You know, if I got to do that myself, yeah, we're good. I mean, we're good.
Dude, the eyeball pressure, that is a great way to put it. You're right. The guys flip it around and it's like they're just staring at you waiting to give them something. And especially for a coffee, you go buy a $4 or $5 coffee, which is a ripoff anyway. Now you want me to throw 15, and that's the minimum, right? They go 15, 20, 25.
Yeah.
I do custom.
Yeah.
And like, listen, I'm happy to give money to those food service people with good service. Now, if I order Starbucks, it's a couple times a month. I like you said, on the app, I'll go pick it up. I'm not tipping that. But if I go into the store and order it, again, it's way overpriced coffee, but the people in Starbucks are so flipping nice that I am happy to give them a tip. Like, they're the nicest, besides Chick-fil-A, they're like the nicest fast food service people in any business there is that I've ever come across. Like, you come in, they say hello, they're writing little notes on your coffee, have a great day, miss you, call me, whatever they put on there. It's just, it's another level of service, and I'm happy to pay a little bit extra for that.
There's one restaurant that I pick up from, and I love to tip, because this is a guy who owns this pizzeria, and I've talked about it, and I got to be vague because I've been under strict rules for my family. This is a guy who's got this incredible pizzeria. Rob Roja knows this, and he and I talk about it all the time. And I probably after the show, I'll tell you this guy. This guy makes the best pizza in the area by a mile. Like, nobody even comes close. And it's like, it's got the kind of little New Haven situation, got John's of Bleecker Street. This is like elite pizza. And I grew up eating John's of Bleecker Street. I grew up eating shitty pizza. I grew up eating mediocre pizza, and I've been, you know, spoiled by really good pizza. When you get this pizza, it is elite pizza. Like, if Dave Portnoy, who I believe that his pizza reviews are actually very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his, all joking aside, like, his nines are, I agree with him. Like, I totally, like, I don't think he's full of shit at all. And I don't think a lot of people think he's full of shit. If this guy, and I'm not going to say his name of the pizzeria, if this guy had Dave Portnoy come in here, he'd have way high eights. Like, there's and I'm even being, like, gentle, because I know that, you know, Dave doesn't like to be pushed into a nine anyway. But this dude is, like, elite, right? He's fucking crazy. This pizzeria is crazy. And the guy goes on social media and does bananas stuff. And he's, like, everything. It's almost as if he goes out of his way to alienate the local customers.
Oh, God.
He throws people out.
Oh.
He says things bad to them. He tears up businesses around him if they've done something wrong to him. He's, like, slightly unhinged. He knows he's a maniac. It's like everything that you can I might as well just, you know, set the whole restaurant on fire.
Is he the pizza Nazi?
he is. I mean, this is no joke. No joke. The pizza is so elite, people don't care.
Mm.
People don't care how crazy he is.
That's when you know you have good food, and he knows it.
Dude, I cannot. I'm gonna, next time you come here, but he doesn't. You cannot show up. There are no slices. You got to order a pie. Rob Roja knows all about this. Rob and I talk all the time. This guy's Instagram, and I'm not any. No matter what you do, I'm not giving any. I'm not gonna, because my daughter has said to me, do not get us banned.
Right.
Whatever you do not get us banned, because the pizza is so elite. that the guy's crazy. And I want to endear my, and I have not told him I'm a knife maker. I don't try to, I do try, Lila says, you know, when he's nice, sometimes he's very brusque with me when I pick the pizza up. Sometimes he's very friendly when I pick the pizza up. Mm. And I always, when I get the change, I'm, you know, give you cash, get a discount. I always take the change and I make sure that he sees me put the tip in. Right. You know, sometimes if we're talking about the Knicks, he'll talk about the Knicks. Talk about the Yankees, talk about the Yankees. Sometimes he doesn't want to talk at all.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes he's so fucking high, he just like can't shut up. He's covered in flour. He's the place is a relative dump, but the pizza is so elite, it pulls all the I mean it's like war zone. Mm. He's got a war zone situation. The pizza is so elite, it takes it all away. It's the most crazy thing, and I'm like, I need him to. I want him to recognize me. I think he recognizes me for my order because we do the same order every week. Every once in a while. I need him to see me put the money in the tip jar.
Right.
And he didn't do anything else except for the pizza's so good I don't want him to leave.
It's like that Seinfeld episode where George puts the dollar and he doesn't see it, so he grabs it back out.
It's exactly like that. It's exactly like that, and this dude knows the people call him the pizza Nazi because he has thrown people out. He has, and the craziest part is before the pandemic, we knew somebody who was just like, oh, this is a pizza restaurant, and I opened, I came in and asked for something. The guy yelled at me, called me an asshole, and threw me out. Don't go there anymore. So we were like, and in my mind, I'm thinking the pizza can't be that good up in Westchester, you know, so I was just like, we're not going to go to that guy. He's a jerk. So then all of a sudden during the pandemic, we were so bored, we just got it, and we're like, why did we wait so long? Why do we wait so long? Now it's just like, I will tip the shit out of this guy.
Right.
People bring in bottles of wine. People bring in bottles of whiskey. People bring in marijuana. People, his customers just like, they just want him to not leave because they understand how special the pizza is. But he's doing nothing on the sides to help his situation. It's literally the soup Nazi.
That's why I'm so glad that we don't have any good pizza places around here, because I would eat it once a week. Everything around here is what I call slop house pizza.
Yeah.
It's just like
passable
bread with friggin' a half a pound of cheese on there,
right,
to hide the taste of their shitty sauce and their crappy crust. And like when you appreciate, like you're saying, John's and Patsy's is my favorite in New York City.
Yeah.
And even, you know, when you go up to Pepe's in New Haven and stuff, it's just a different class of pizza than like
different
fucking
class.
Ray Barry or whatever these.
Yeah, Ray Barry.
You know, these stupid.
Original Ray.
Yeah, Original Ray.
Sbarro's. I know.
Sbarro, yeah. And it's very difficult to find, but most people don't care.
Right.
And then you take them to this place that has amazing pizza with a thinner crust and just the right amount of char and thick pepperoni.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, they don't like it. Like the kids don't like it because they're used to this other shit.
Right.
And it's just disappointing.
It's because pizza is like.
It's very polarizing.
There's an expression of like pizza is like sex. If it's good, it's great. But if it's bad, it's still pretty good.
Yeah,
you know, that's right, usually what a lot of I've always heard that from the past, and I've eaten garbage pizza. You know the difference between like you know all the different stuff and stuff like that, but it is hilarious in terms of the tipping culture. I'm just like, now I'm not. The thing is with my pizza guy, I'm not gonna go out of my way and like, you know. Oh, by the way, if you ever need a knife, I'm not gonna. I'm afraid.
Right.
I'm afraid of what that will open because he's crazy. You know, and I'm just like, I go in, maybe I'll wear a, one day I was wearing, and we were talking about the Knicks or something like that. And it turns out we were both at the same game. And he goes, oh, I was at that game. You should have come up to me. I would have driven you home. I'm like, I don't even know this guy. You know, I'm like, what? Like, yeah, thanks, man. I'll think about that the next time. Oh, yeah. I think I, you know, maybe we might happen to be at the same game at the same time that I don't even realize. Maybe I will hit you up in the DMs. Hey, you at this Knicks game? I really could use a ride home. I mean, that I don't want to. My daughter gave me such strict instructions. You got to tip. You got to be nice. You got to be quiet. You take your pizza. You tip them. You shut the fuck up and get out.
You come in. You walk immediately to your right.
There are times where there's not even room to stand, and then they'll tell you to just wait in your car, and then they'll bring it to you. The hilarious part is every time I go and Lila's around, she always wants to go. Because she wants to know what the reaction, what's going to happen.
Yeah, there's so much. It's a show.
It's to the point where Lila's got some of her friends from college who don't even live anywhere in the same state, and they're following this fucking media, you know. And it's like, did you hear what the pizza guy said today? You know, ask Rob Rojai. He sends me messages like, yeah, I cannot believe this guy. I'm like, yeah, guy's unbelievable. And Lila always, it doesn't matter what, she wants to drive with me to go get it because she wants to know. And then if we have a little bit of a repartee talking about the Knicks, or he's a big Knicks fan, I say something about the Knicks, and then we'll come home and Lila will say to my wife or her mom, she'll say, well, Jeff's dad's boyfriend was very talkative today. and it's this hilarious, like, you know, and sometimes they're just like, you know, I don't think he likes me. Hillary, you better go in. You know, you wear your shorts and, you know, look like, you know, younger woman. Maybe he'll be happier when you're in there. But it's like the tipping, you're right. The tipping culture is crazy. And he's the only guy I'm like, yeah, no problem. I'm fucking tipping. If I don't tip this guy, I'm screwed.
Well, you're risking losing a limb or a family member, possibly. That's insurance.
I'm not worried about that as much as I am getting banned. He has a banned. He has a banned list of customers, like telephones. He will not serve.
Oh my god.
Yeah, no. This is like legit. I'm not even dramatizing this. And I've talked to. I mean, it's total madness. And he's just. It's the whole thing is hilarious. I've never in my life been so not obsessed, but like aware. I'm aware of this guy. And it's hilarious.
I gotta go now.
Funny. Oh, dude, when this is all over, I'll send you a whole thing. And just don't ruin it for me. Okay. As my daughter says.
I won't mention your name.
Oh, Lila would be so mad at me about this episode. She'd be allowed just like, you talk too much. You've said too many things. Who knows? He could geolocate you.
Anytime you say the word pizza, please bleep that out.
God. Oh, God. She's just like, she once said to me, she's like, whatever you do, don't ruin it for all of us.
She knows the value.
Here's the best thing. I'll say one more thing about this dude. This dude is the man. He says he goes after other restaurants that don't do a nice job or whatever. He gets into spats with people and he's not afraid to like air out the dirty laundry. He'll say, I've had cancer, 3 heart attacks, and a broken jaw from my wife's boyfriend. I'm not afraid of you. That is legitimately the best part is I've got a broken jaw from my wife's boyfriend. That might be the fucking greatest thing he's ever said. That's his motto. It's like on the pizza on the merch. It's like I've had cancer, heart attack 3 times, and I got a broken jaw from my wife's boyfriend. I'm not afraid of you.
Oh, that's brilliant.
You can't make it up.
This guy's the definition of I don't give a fuck.
No, completely. We were going to have this conversation about design, and now we did 25 minutes on the pizza guy. Tipping.
Oh.
Tipping.
I mean, I almost expected that when I had my colonoscopy this summer for them to turn around and ask for a tip for that, too.
Dude, how, I mean, here's the worst part about the colonoscopy. It's the anticipation and the fact that it's not free. That's the only thing. I mean, and then the day before is a disaster, but, we don't have to do 15 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the day before it sucked.
Yeah,
but,
disaster area.
And then, but the procedure and all that.
Yeah,
it was, I mean.
Yeah, they knock you out. Nothing better than getting knocked out.
I could do that every day.
Oh, dude, the best sleep you're ever going to get is during colonoscopy. It's only 15 minutes, but it feels like a year.
We actually insulted the doctor because Lindsay came to pick me up and she was wearing an Ohio State shirt. And the doctor came in after just to check on me and he saw Lindsay's shirt. He's like, oh boy, I guess you didn't read my profile, did you? Because he must have went to Michigan. So I almost created a little. I'm like, I'm glad she wasn't here before you went up there and after.
That reminds me. My mother and I had the same oral surgeon this is years ago, and I had to get my wisdom teeth out, and we had the same dentist, and they suggest we go to this oral surgeon, and I had to get my wisdom teeth out. And this is a long time ago. I was really young, So I was telling my mom about it, and she, this is, you know, like I said, it's maybe could be 10 years ago. And she's, oh, I know that guy, that doc, that general surgeon, he was a real. And now we, my come from, I mean, my grandfather was Italian, so my mother would, you know, mm-hmm. freely use Italian slurs.
Yeah.
So she started, you know, she's saying, oh, he was a real grease ball, and this, that, and the other thing. I didn't like his way with me. You know, I didn't like the way he talked. My mother was, you know, God bless her, but she had an opinion of how she should be talked to.
Okay.
And I don't know what happened. I must have just stuck in my consciousness. I didn't really think much of it. So I went to get my teeth removed. And apparently I said, when I came out of it, to the doctor, I don't know what my mother was talking about. You're not a greaseball. You're a great guy. However, she was kind of right, because when I went to my first appointment with him before I had my wisdom teeth out, he goes, and he's holding his finger, like, you know, he's pointing, you know, like, you know, when you do the rock and roll sign, mm-hmm. where you have the horns, you know, you have your pinky out and your forefinger out.
Yep.
He had it like that, and he was pointing it at me almost like a gun, but with the finger out, kind of like very Joe Pesci. And he's kind of pointing at my finger. He's like, I'm going to give you this stuff. It's going to smoke you. You're going to want to come back here. And it was almost like Dice Clay Jr. And he's like, you know, you're going to want to come back tomorrow. You're going to come back and you're going to say, give me some more of that, doc. You know, so all of a sudden I'm just like, whoa, well, I guess my mom was right. So then I get the surgery done, and then I was just like, yeah, you're really a grease ball. You're a great guy. The guy apparently looked at the nurse told me that, and I was like, I don't know what my mother was talking about. She thought you were an asshole.
It's so weird how people that whatever that what did they give you, propofol? I don't even know.
I don't know what they gave me. They probably, yeah, propofol for the colonoscopy. I don't know what, probably gave me the same thing for the wisdom teeth, but they, you know, propofol is also referred to as milk of amnesia.
Because it's white. Yeah.
No, that was what Michael Jackson took.
Yeah, oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
That's what did him in, and because it's white. Because when they give you the thing, and the when they pump it in, it's white. Milk of amnesia.
Powerful stuff. Yeah, I didn't wake up saying anything crazy or loopy. I was pretty with it when I woke up. Surprisingly, I woke up very quickly after the procedure, so they must have given me like the bare minimum amount, but I could have driven home. I was fine. I'm glad it didn't, but oh yeah, I know. I remember, you didn't you do an Instagram story like, Lila, I'm okay, and you're like,
yeah,
staggering down the street.
My wife was picking me up, she's like, oh Jesus Christ, you're really gonna do this?
You're a mess.
Don't worry, I'm okay, I'm fine. You know what? Getting older isn't the worst thing in the world. The problem is like everything's so expensive. And look at us. We're talking about this now.
I know.
You know, thank God. I mean, thank God my wife has health insurance from her job. Because
same here.
Like, having to get a colonoscopy and getting knocked out is not fucking cheap.
Oh, I can only imagine. I know, because I had a few appointments. My wife quit her job and got a new job. But there was a 2-month period in there until her benefits kick in. So they don't kick in until October 1st. And
so
in the meantime,
I had. Don't get sick.
She's like, well, we could do COBRA for $4,000 a month. I'm like, I'm just going to be careful in the shop. Make sure I don't cut anything off. But, you know, I had to go to the dermatologist, I had the dentist, and I had to pay everything out of pocket, which sucks. But it was way cheaper than $4,000.
This is also the reason why you're trying to take care of yourself.
Yeah,
this is the whole
reason
why you're with Tyler Minton, Mayhem Minton, Melee Minton.
Because I don't want to be on prescription drugs and under constant supervision the rest of my life. Like,
no.
I, you know, take care of my body as best I can and let nature, you know, some things you just can't prevent.
I will say that I had my first cholesterol test when I was in my 30s. They said that my cholesterol was a little elevated for my age.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden the alarm bells go off and Hillary's telling me about this. And then I'm getting calls from the nutritionist from the doctor's office. And I'm just like, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm like, I'll take care of it. And I thought to myself, like, just, you got to figure it out. Because, I mean, obviously when you're 30, you're no longer 16. They're invulnerable. And I didn't want to be told I had to change my life drastically at a time where it's past, you know, the point of no return, because that's when you got the problems with all this, the bullshit and the, you know, stomach sticking out, and you got the dick do, and you're unable to, my back problem, I haven't had a back problem in years, and a lot of it's because doing the Peloton and doing a lot of exercise and then just kind of staying limber and then the run. I thought the running was going to fuck my back up. I haven't had any back problems whatsoever in the past 5 years. And I think it's because I lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, that helps not carrying around another 50 pounds or whatever. That. That's a big strain. You know, your body wasn't built for that. It was built for a certain frame and not for that.
You look at animals in the wild. None of them have fucking guts. You know, I mean, that should be like everything you need to know. You don't see like, well, we have this overweight, you know, overweight, you know, baboon problem.
Well, the only overweights of people are those in zoos, like Pan,
right.
Because they're not getting their normal exercise, running around, chasing things, hunting.
Yes. So what are we doing?
Yep, that's the recipe right there. Move. You gotta move.
I think I might have given somebody an eating disorder because I was talking about pizza and sushi, and now we're saying, "Come on, fatso, get off your ass."
Have you seen this? The latest? I didn't watch it yet, but there's a Netflix documentary about The Biggest Loser and how all these people are just even fatter than they were before, and just the dark side of this whole rapid weight loss thing. And
what do they say? What is the
part of the problem?
I'm not
going
to watch it.
I mean, on the show, they were doing all these kind of behind the scenes things that the doctors didn't know about. So they would, you know, they would bring these people in for their blood work weekly and checking all their markers and everything looked good. But I guess because other things that they were trainers were giving them didn't show up right away in blood work and things. I mean, listen, anything more than like a pound and a half a week of weight loss is unsafe. Like you shouldn't be dropping weight that fast. There's things that are going to go wrong. And all the contestants, like the guy who won it is even bigger than he was before. It's because they also can't maintain that lifestyle and the discipline that it takes to stay at a healthy weight. Some people just don't have it. They don't have the willpower. Maybe they're scheduled. They're managing kids and stress. There's a lot of factors that people don't realize that contribute to being overweight. And you got to want to commit. Like my other trainer that I had, I loved him, Michael Smoke from Higher Up Wellness. If you guys ever want to follow him, he's a younger guy. He just tells it like it is. But he always says, like, it's not easy, but it's simple.
Right.
And it's true. And you just have to, but we're just in a society today of everybody's on their phone, go, 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 stress. Like the harder you work, you got to work harder, 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 harder in order to get anywhere. And like this overworked, besides over tipping culture, it's an overworked culture. Like, you know, we're working so hard and for what? Like, we want to pay bills and be financially independent, but at what risk? Like my wife is just like she has a job, but then she also has a consulting job, which is more stress and more work and really not that much more money. I'm like, will you just stop? Like, just take a break here. Take a breather. Like, we don't need this extra. All it's doing is creating extra stress in your life. And I can see it in your face. It affects your sleep. You're waking up in the middle of the night because you're panic attacks. And in the end, like, on your gravestone, it's not going to say, boy, I'm so glad I put in those extra few hours at the office because it really made a difference in the world.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, listen, I'm all for working hard. I do. I go the extra mile on everything. But I've also, you know, my buddy Paul Jasper, Copper Pig, Fine Woodworking, is also kind of, he's the same age as us, looks at life a little bit differently and more focuses on like your family and friends and relationships rather than chasing the dollar like everybody seems to be doing.
But it's interesting that you say that. And there's a lot to unpack because, like, the funny thing is I was thinking about yesterday was the 6-year anniversary of my guy, Carl Ruiz, who was with the Food Network.
Right, yeah.
And I've said this a million times. When I started doing collaborations with him, I mean, he sold a shit ton of knives. I could have been in the Carl Ruiz business for a long, long time. We had plans. We were going to do all sorts of stuff. And when he died, we made the decision to just stop making. I'm not profiting off a guy's name. And there were all these like workarounds. People saying, "Well, you can give it." I'm not doing it. I don't want to pay the light bills. with Carl Ruiz. And I just don't like, I don't like anything about it. And like, and the other thing is if this, if I got to hang my hat on these as my designs, then I got bigger problems.
Right.
And one of his whole things in life was this concept called Ruizing, which you do what you want, when you want, you eat what you want, when you want, you drink what you want, when you want, no one's telling you to do anything different, and you could die tomorrow. And so people are sending me messages all the time, Ruizing, you got to do, and I'm like, well, you know, respectfully, he was my friend, and I miss him dearly, but like, Ruizing wasn't great for long-term happiness in life. Like, he would FaceTime me in his bathrobe, and he would be exactly like he was on online, Sabor Chef on Instagram, like drinking shots of whiskey. He was taking shots of whiskey while he was talking with me, and he would eat bacon. You know, it gets to the point where, yeah, I understand, you know, you could die tomorrow, but that doesn't mean you have to die tomorrow.
Right, doesn't mean you live every day like the plane's going down.
Yeah, right. You're not in the spiral. You're not in the spiral yet.
Right.
But the other thing is I know your podcast host, Jason on Shop Sounds, had this unbelievable physical transformation. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. Like shredded, not an ounce of fat. And he had abs and pecs and muscles. Mm-hmm. And he was like a physical specimen that I'm sure if he wanted to compete in some sort of bodybuilding or some sort of thing, he probably could have. The only thing I could think of is, God, that's got to be a lot of work. And God, I don't think I can do it.
It's, you know, again, he's 15 years younger than us, right? So there's a lot more motivation. There's more energy.
Right.
But Jason's the type of guy that once he commits to something, he's committed. It is on. There's no...
For the rest of his life?
We'll see. I don't know. But I definitely went overboard at the beginning, you know, 7 days a week. To me, is just that's just overkill. Your body doesn't have a chance to recover. But he had a goal in mind, and, you know, so now, but in doing that, I love seeing people getting in shape at whatever age and learning about food and health and all these, because it's only going to help you down the road as you get older. But it's also, you have to stick with it. It's, you know, I don't like the word diet. It's more like lifestyle change.
Right.
And that's the problem, people, when they either don't see results or they're easily swayed or don't have a lot of willpower, it's very easy to fall off the wagon. Like, extremely easy. Like I said, I walk 2 to 3 times a day, but one day I'll miss, and the next day I'll be like, yeah, I don't feel like walking again today. It's like, so the after 30 days of doing it all the same and doing what I need to, I take one day off, and then it's almost like it's hard to get back on. And that's all it takes is like, I don't know what the formula is. Didn't they say it's like 60 days to create a habit? It used to be 30, and then they said it takes 60 days to create a habit. And for me, even I could do a year, and I could fall off in a day.
It's for me, it was weird because before the pandemic, I did run, but then there was like a long stretch where I wasn't doing a whole lot. I think I was really investing my time and energy into the shop. And then also my daughter was very young, and I was like really wanted to be present for her. So I wasn't doing as much for myself. And then during the pandemic, I got the Peloton, and I was like, I lost a shit ton of weight very quickly, like probably like almost 50 pounds. And it was very, very quick. And I almost looked at the pinnacle of it, I almost looked a little bit sickly. Like people were asking me, are you okay?
Yeah.
And I lost a ton of fat. And then I was down to 205, which I was originally like almost 250. And then I would bike 6 days a week. And I walked the dogs, and I was like obsessed.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I've been doing the New York City Marathon training, it's a very specific thing, and I'm terrified of hurting myself.
Yeah.
I have a system in place where it's running 4 days a week and then doing a little bit of CrossFit, but I just, you know, I end up doing a little bit of more walking and stuff like that. And I have these rest days, and I'm shocked at how better my performance is after the rest days. And I'm totally afraid of overtraining. I'm totally afraid of hurting myself.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is I'm also totally afraid of having doing something with my life that is unattainable after the marathon. Like, I want to keep, I'm enjoying the running. I'm not going to do this. I got to run this weekend. On Wednesday, I got to run 9 miles before I go to work, and then I got to do 18 on Saturday, which is going to be probably the hardest for me. And I don't want to do that. But, like, I, in the springtime, I want to, you know, I want to run again. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to do these things that I don't think that are attainable for me to kind of keep doing. So, like, I don't do the diet. I mean, we don't eat bullshit. But, like, mm-hmm. I'm staying off the booze. I've been having beer before runs and stuff like at night before a run the next day, which I feel like I'm getting some carbs in before a long run. But at the same time, I'm like, it's not, like, the be-all, end-all. But I just don't want to do anything that I don't think I can carry on until up in my 70s.
That's exactly it. Like, don't commit to something that you don't think that you'll be able to stick to. Like, don't make unrealistic goals. Like, smaller goals first. All right, I can commit to these. Let's add something else and something else. But, like, going full whole hog right out of the gate into something, man, it's very difficult to maintain, because then all of a sudden it's you get hurt, or something happens to your family, or there's all these ulterior or exterior factors come into play, and it completely throws you off, and then you get thrown off your routine, and then to try to get back on is always difficult.
There was one point where, when I was back, you know, when I was losing a lot of weight during the Peloton and not drinking, I wasn't drinking at all. I definitely during the pandemic, I scared the shit out of myself because I was taking out the recycling and there was just like a ton of beer and a ton of booze. And it was a real being like, yo, you are drinking a lot. And that was a big deal. So when I started doing the Peloton and I was losing all this weight, I was so amazed how much weight I was losing. I was getting on the scale every day. Mm. And then I started to find myself being like, oh, you fucked up. Why are you, you know, why aren't you removing as much weight as you had been before? What are you doing? And then I would slightly mentally punish myself for not being disciplined. I would kind of put that in a position of, it was obviously a discipline issue. You know, or I shouldn't have eaten that extra whatever last night. Or, you know, like I would get on the scale and I'd be like, you're an asshole. What did you do? Look what you did. Look what you did. And I can understand why people have a very negative opinion of themselves. And I thought when I started doing this running, you know, I thought maybe I'll get down. I mean, I never thought I was going to get down to the Jason situation. But I thought, maybe I'll. And then I've always, you know, I see a picture of myself with a gut and I'm just like, you're an asshole. You know, you still have a gut on you, asshole. And then now I'm just like, I just want to be able to, now I've gotten to the point now where, you know, I check my weight just to see what's going on. But at the same time, I'm like, I don't go on there obsessively. And I also think to myself, I want to be able to bend over when I get older, tie my shoes. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to be able to move around. I want to be able to do my job. I want to be making sculpture or making knives and running this business. And I don't want to be like groaning when I wake up in the morning.
Yeah. I consciously... When I get up and out of a chair, when people are there, I consciously make sure I don't grunt. Oh. Don't go like, ugh, or like, ugh. Because I don't want to be that guy. Even though it may hurt or it's a little difficult. Like, I don't want to admit that. So I try to be sure that I don't do that.
My right knee is not thrilled with me. This whole marathon.
I can't imagine.
Journey.
I mean, pounding on pavement for hours on end on the week during the week. That's gotta just be. Oh.
This, you'd be surprised, because the training this year is different. This year, as opposed to when I did it 12 years ago, is different. 12 years ago, I had real acute knee problems after 13 miles, which I do not have now, and I attribute that to the fact that I did 5 years of Peloton. And I feel like I've kind of helped the muscles around my joints.
Sure.
You know, so I haven't noticed, because I've gone over 13 miles and I haven't found this acute pain that really bothered me. And I'm changing my sneakers, and I got this sneaker place, and they got me on these sneakers that are lighter than they were before. And I like them, and I have no back problems whatsoever. And I'm running a little different, and I'm trying to kind of burn a lot of time on the soft track, which I feel like is better. And I haven't had any back problems whatsoever. But what I'm noticing is that, like, my knees are definitely, like, my legs are heavier. After 9 miles, I feel like my shit is a little heavier. Like, I just don't have the oomph that I did when I was 12 years ago.
Yeah.
It's not the cardio. The cardio's fine. Like, the cardio's great. It's just, like, the musculature. The musculature. The musculature.
Oh, my God.
You know what I'm...
Yeah.
George Takei.
Yeah, from Stern.
George Takei.
Musculature.
Yo, my musculature. The musculature is not doing what I wanted to do.
I know, I feel that, because some days when I take a walk in the morning, it's directly up this huge hill on my house. Like, that's how it starts. And so, right. I know right away how I'm feeling that day. What if my legs are heavy, like you just said, or heavy walking up this? It's like when you go to the gym and the first thing you do when you pick up a 45-pound plate, I'm like, if that's heavy, if it feels heavy, I know it's going to be a rough day. Like, I just don't have it. But if you pick it up like, yeah, this is normal weight, and you just move it around, like, all right, this is going to be good. But yeah, some days, you know, either you didn't get enough sleep or you didn't have the right nutrition the day before or that day before you went. Like, it's all connected.
Yeah.
Especially when you get older. There's, you know, the recipe changes greatly.
Hillary says, she says, I'm sure you're going to do this every year. And I'm like, I'm not going to. I don't plan on doing it every year because it's such a huge sacrifice
commitment.
Of time. It's such a, because like, like, when I run on a Saturday, like, the mornings, it's not a big deal, except for now we're getting into Wednesdays or the long runs in the morning, and I can't do it at night. I'm just too tired.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to do 9 miles on Wednesday morning. And I got to, so that means I got to wake up at 4 to get out the door by 5 to hopefully get home by 7 so I can walk the dogs and then get to work on time. But the crazy part is my right knee is, like, super-duper not happy with me, but not, I got it imaged, and it's just, like, a slight meniscus sprain that my ortho guy says it shouldn't be a problem, and he gave me some PT that I'm supposed to do that I haven't done yet, but that's, you know, like I said, sometimes I don't read the instructions,
right?
And my biggest problem is at night when I'm lying down, the weight of my legs kind of like keep me up at night, just because like there's something going on with my knee where my knee doesn't feel good when I'm sleeping. That becomes an issue. But I got these ice wraps. I wrap my knees in ice. I got the thermo gun that my wife calls the Portuguese butt blaster.
If you're I have one.
Naked gun, if you're a Naked Gun fan, I guess there's a moment where they refer to something as the Portuguese butt blaster. So anytime there's anything vibratory, my wife immediately, anything minorly vibratory,
she's drawn to it.
Automatically called the Portuguese butt blaster. And I said, Kay, hell, can you bring me the thermogun? She goes, oh, you mean you want to bring in your Portuguese butt blaster? I'm like, yeah, that thing.
That's the one.
Put it on my fucking legs. So I don't know, man. I'm fascinated by, you know, I just, part of me is like, you know, the funny thing is like dies in every film. Honor Kagler, he had him on last week, and he's just like, he's crazy. He's 40. And he used to be a professional mixed martial artist. He was like a professional. Like, if you can go back into the original episodes, I have a whole, in the original episodes with Honor Kagler, Dies in Every Film, I actually have I have the highlight reels of all his fights, and they're unbelievable. The guy's amazing. And then now he's, same thing, back on the pan. You know, after the pan, he got into shape. He and his wife got into shape. He's doing ultra marathons, destroying himself. Destroying, I mean, literally, like, today, it's like, destroying himself. He's doing grappling events now. He's training to do, because he wants to get his black belt in grappling.
Jeez.
And he said to me, he's like, I am just a stubborn guy, and I just don't want to. Same thing as me. I don't want to burn it down while I got it. I don't want to waste the time while I can.
I mean, listen, there's countless studies out there about, you know, being active, being physical as late in your life as possible, and how it just extends your life. Like, your body needs to move. It needs to be stressed in a physical sense. And unfortunately, a lot of people just aren't into it.
And it's not nice.
They just turn to medication instead. It's not fun. Like, I like the results of how I feel after going to the gym, but some days when I'm there, it is a struggle mentally to get through it. And just to go there, you know, it's not far. It's not even far away. It's 7 minutes down the road and then 7 minutes home. It's not far. But if I can't do anything at home, I have zero discipline to do. I don't know what it is. I feel like once you're at the gym, you're there to work out. You're there.
Yeah.
There's nothing. You can't just sit around and hang out.
Right. Right.
So, but when you're at home, like, yeah, that was enough. Like, yeah, I'm good. A couple reps, that was good. Like, just you have to be extremely disciplined, even if you have all the equipment, which, again, that's another testament to Jason, whereas Jim is at home. And he wakes up and he does it at home. Like, I tried it for years and it just didn't work. So being around other people that are exercising and you are, it's just another factor in motivation.
So you kind of made it your job when you go to, you're commuting to your, to a, like, it's like a mindset of like you're going to work almost.
Yep. And that's why I know mentally where I hit that point during the day. Like, if I said to myself the night before, I'm going to the gym at 9 a.m. tomorrow, and I wake up and it's 8:30. I'm like, I'm not there. I can't go to the gym and put in the work. So I just got to wait until 11:30, 12, 1, whenever it hits me, they're like, all right, let's go. Because it's half, well, it's probably even more, they'll probably say it's even more mental than physical, because your brain is more powerful than your body. You know, like when you're trying to squeeze out that last rep, and if you're in your mind, you're like, I'm never going to get this, then you're never going to get it. But if your mind says you can do this, you probably can. So you got to be very strong mind, strong willed.
For the running, I have to trick myself.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
I'll tell you a few tricks, and then I'm going to leave us with, I'm going to make an admission that I'm not proud of. Okay. So that'll get ready for that. That's a tease, radio tease, ladies and gentlemen. So you have to trick, when you're running, you have to trick yourself. And one of the tricks is you have to know the route. Mm. If you don't know the route, you're at a mental disadvantage, because you're going to start to say, well, where am I? You know, even if I have a Garmin watch, which I love, like the Garmin watch has changed the way I run, because it tells me how far I've gone. Like, it kind of tells me how far I've gone, especially if I got to like recharge with a fucking goo or something like that. So, but you have to know where you're going. You also, when you're planning your routes, it's nice to have certain milestones that are nice to look at.
Mm.
Like, I can only do maximum 2 miles on the soft track at the park, because you're just like
the same thing over and over.
Yeah. Just like, this is sucks. So I have a few routes, and then there are some that I like more than others. And then I will throw extra laps on the soft track and do the route that I like, because I know that I'll be by the river and it'll be nice, and it'll be, you know, I'll end up where I like to end up, or I'll end up at a friend's store and he'll give me a glass of water or something like that. So, like, you have to trick yourself into doing it. And then the only reason why I'm doing the New York City Marathon is because I know New York. I know the fucking route. Mm-hmm. Like, I know where I am, and I love New York, and I'm like Mr. New York, but I know exactly where the fuck I am. And I could never do the Boston Marathon. I could never do the Washington Marathon.
Right.
I could never do any of these marathons, because I'm like, I don't have any like mental milestones to kind of keep going. If you start to run, especially, even I did a 5K at years ago at Fordham, and I went with my wife and an old coworker, and the whole time I'm just like, how much farther are we gonna go? It became, you couldn't get in a rhythm, you couldn't get your breathing right, you couldn't get your pace right, and all you're thinking of is, are we done yet? That's the destroyer. That is like the mental destroyer. If you don't know where you are, you don't have an idea of how to pace yourself to how much farther you got to go, you're done, totally, totally done. And the other thing is, I have to listen to podcasts that are good. Like, I have to, like, I had the book on tape from Bruce Springsteen, and I love Bruce Springsteen, but I swear to God, the way he reads is like he's putting me to sleep. It's just crazy. It's just the same boring sing-song situation. I love the story, but it's like, you zone out. You know, mm-hmm. So I gotta like find podcasts to kind of occupy your time. And then the last thing I'm going to tell you, and I don't know if I'm embarrassed or not, it's actually turned into a funny thing. I found this company that makes low-dose THC gummies specifically for runners.
What is it called? I think I know what
I'm not going to tell you. I'll tell you off the air. I'm not going to promote this company.
Okay.
I'm not going to promote this company, especially to our listeners. Apparently, there's a subset of runners who love getting stoned before they run.
Mm.
Like, my wife said that there's this group in Brooklyn that they all show up at a block, and then they all fucking choof it up, you know, like this is a fucking smoke screen, and then they run for 8 miles, which I don't think to myself is, it sounds madness. And I'm not a big weed guy. I actually, the last time I smoked weed, I thought I was having a heart attack, which was not pleasant at all. My wife ruined her time, you know?
Ruined her buzz.
I was just like, she's the whole time, she's just like, so does your arm hurt? And I'm like, I don't know. And then you just don't want to say if you're having a heart attack, because if she thinks you're having a heart attack, and then she said, go upstairs. And I thought, well, if I have a heart attack upstairs, it's going to be harder to get me downstairs. The whole was a wreck. So I found this low dose running, specifically for running. It's got caffeine in it. It's got like THC in it. It's got like CBD, all the bullshit, all that you're supposed to have. So I was just like, yeah, what the fuck? I'm going to do these long runs. Why don't I have a good time? So you're supposed to eat two of them. So I ate one of them for a while. I didn't feel shit. I had two of them. And the first time I had two of them, I didn't get high until I got home. Like, I ate it before I ran. And then by the time I got home, my daughter was just like, dude, dad's stoned. And I'm like, well, not really. It's supposed to give you like the idea of a runner's high.
Yeah, yeah.
And it definitely did, but it didn't give me any, I didn't feel any positive benefits while I was running. I wasn't like giggling.
Okay.
I was like trying to think, is this working or not? But then when I got home, apparently I was very funny. apparently I was hilarious, but like way more, like noticeably hilarious, the point where my wife was just like, I think you should try these more often.
Yeah.
I want you on these, not for me, not for you, but for me, because today you're funny, you know.
You're on fire. We need a low dose for you.
Yeah, it's low dose edible, and it's like, it's fine. I mean, this past weekend I did 12 miles. I was so uninspired, I forgot to even take it, so I didn't even give a shit. I was just like, but it was just funny because, you know, now all of a sudden I'm, you know, when I load up, you know, I got a waistband, and I've done all the different type of waistbands with the different types of water bottles, and I have the one that's soft and you can put in your thing. I've had the ones that slide around. I've had all of them. So I got the and I have a special. You can't wear the running shorts with the built-in underwear because Chafe City. So now I have my special underwear and then special shorts. And then I got a special shirt. And then I got to do the shit on my nipples and my fucking armpits so I don't get the goddamn chafing. And then I got glasses. But I got the special glasses so they don't fog up. You can't just wear any glasses. They fog up. So I got to have the special glasses and fog up. And then I got the hat because I sweat so much. It's such a production. It's almost like being an astronaut. Just to go fucking run for 8 miles.
Fully suited up.
Oh, and I'm counting the miles in my sneakers because sneakers only have, like, really good running shoes. They have, like, 250, 300 miles before they're shot. So you got to count the miles.
Oh.
And I got to, like, time out how much miles I'm going to put on them before the marathon because I don't want to have busted out shoes before I go. But then at the same time, I got to break them in before the marathon. It's such a production, Keith. It's such a production. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I'm going to have to pass on that.
Yeah, I'm going to pass on it. This is it. This is my midlife crisis, and I'm done. I'm done with my midlife crisis.
Listen, I mean, that's a huge accomplishment. I mean, 26 miles, never mind the training, but then the actual race. Like, hats off to you. I could just never do it. Just running. This body wasn't built for running.
I think your body was built for running.
These long ass legs with small joints and it's just not.
I envy you got those long legs. You got a bigger, longer stride. I bet you had a great pace. I'm embarrassed to tell people my pace because now at this end, I'm just like, oh, fuck yourself. I don't give a shit anymore. But I don't advertise it because I know that there'll be people like, I only do 7 miles an hour. You know, a seven minute mile.
Yeah, but not for 26 miles.
I mean, you know, look, my biggest fear now is what's referred to as the bonk. Oh, by the way, P.S. Hillary says, are you going to take the edibles for the marathon? I'm like, no, because I gotta get the bus at 34th Street to get me to the Verrazano Bridge. And I'm not going to be running until like 10. So, like, I'm going to have 6 hours of meandering around via the Verrazano Bridge. What, you want to be fucking high in the middle of fucking Staten Island? No, thank you.
Well,
but the big fear is something called the bonk, which is after, like, 16 miles where you just, like, cash out. Like, you're just, like, you had it.
Yeah.
And then you got another 10 to go.
And then it's just finding that energy to keep going, right?
I'm working out. I'm working out. I got a place to stay. My friend Eric, I'm going to stay my friend Eric and his family's house the night before. They live on the Upper East Side. And then I'm going to get to the bus, the Michael J. Fox bus on 34th Street. And then the other thing is they don't, you used to be able to like leave your bag. And then you'd get it at the, you'd leave your bag and then they'd put it in a trailer and then they'd bring it to the finish line and then you could get the bag. Because you don't want to carry a million things, you know?
Right.
Like, I'm not going to run the backpack. And then what happens, because it's really going to be really cold. It's going to be really cold Sunday morning. Mm. So what the move is that you got to wear old clothes that you end up donating before you get to the starting line. So now I got to find old sweats. And then now I'm just like, I got to make sure my phone's charged. So I can't carry my phone charger. I don't have no room for it. So I'm going to leave a fucking priority box at my friend's house. And this is going to be my toiletries where I spend the night. And it's going to be my fucking charger. And it's going to be a who knows what. And then I'm just going to tell him, I'm give him $20 and say, just stick it in the mail tomorrow. It's such a production, Keith.
Seriously. You need like a team. You need some handlers. They can take care of all this stuff.
I will say the coolest thing about it is my daughter told me that she booked a flight. She's coming to New York to watch me do the marathon, which I was like, I cried. I was like, I couldn't believe it. I was like so like overwhelmed.
That's amazing. You need that support. You need to be running down and see people you know. I mean, it's obviously it's so much energy with everybody, but
if you want to know about the human brain and how unable you are to understand the human brain, go run a marathon. Because I will go through, last time I went through all the emotions to the point where I was happy, I was scared, I was sad, I was anxious, I was laughing and funny, and then I was angry. At one point towards the end, we're walking past the finish line, and I turned to this complete stranger and I said, "Are you mad? I'm mad." He goes, "Yeah, I'm mad too. I don't know why. I'm mad." I'm like, "Yeah, I'm mad too. I have no idea why." It's like, what are we mad about? We just finished the New York City Marathon. I'm just mad. It's too extreme. I mean, it's like your brain moves around. The chemicals are like shuffling all over the place. And it's like you it's crazy.
Well, the amount of emotions you're going through in 3 to 4 hours with your body under all that stress. And for guys like you.
Oh, my God. Thank you. Thank you for being so nice. It's going to be fucking four.
You'll make it. As long as you finish, you know, you get that participation trophy. you'll be good.
I think we've done it. Keith, we've said it all. We really didn't catch. We didn't talk about.
We didn't talk about anything we were going to talk about.
I wanted to talk about Walnut World. We didn't get any Walnut World. I got like stories from Walnut, California. I was going to talk about. I had a story about a guy who stole walnut trees from a guy's house and like floated him down the river to escape. I had all sorts of stories. We're talking about all sorts of stuff. We're gonna have to do it next time.
Okay,
guys. Keith's a man. We need to talk about the fact that I'm gonna see you in 2 days at Cliff's wedding.
Right,
Cliff's wedding party. Gotta cook for you.
Yeah,
tell me,
I can't wait.
When we get off the line, you tell me I'll make you something special. I know you don't need certain things. Okay. All right, guys, I want you to go follow KJ Sawdust on Instagram, KJ Sawdust on YouTube. I want you to listen to the Shop Sounds podcast. Oh, P.S., my man Tyler Minton has got a show called
Truth Serum.
The Truth Serum podcast. Is that good? Do you listen to that?
Here and there, yes. He has like interesting people on. You know, they don't all interest me, but he's just such a super smart, intelligent, knowledgeable guy, and the whole health and fitness and nutrition. He's just a vast wealth of information on it, and he's got really interesting. The most of the guests he has on it seems to me are like trainers, other trainers of like college football programs and things like that that help large groups of people with their training and all that. But he just, yeah, man, I love the guy. I really do.
Shout out to Melee Minton. And Melee is the best, one of the best nicknames I've ever heard. And shout out to him. And many thanks. And guys, I'll have all the links to Keith's stuff, his website, his podcasts. It'll all be in the show notes wherever you're listening to this. And we will see you next week. Keith, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, buddy. We'll see you Wednesday.
You're the man.